Good morning, everyone. It's 5 minutes early, but everyone's here, so we're going to go ahead and get started, and maybe that means we can finish on time, at least. My name's Scott Gazelle.
And Eric Peterson.
And we're the two co-chairs of the meeting, so on behalf of the NQF and us, thank you for agreeing to participate and for all the work you've done before coming to the meeting. Helen, do you or Ian want to say some comments about the format and the...
Sure, happy to. We'll talk a little bit further about the actual content in a little bit. I just want to recap my welcome. Helen Burson, I'm the Senior Vice President of Performance Studies at NQF. In case you can't tell, we literally just opened up this conference room on Friday. They unpacked the table. There's still duct tape on the floor. We really wanted to try to have the capacity to have in-house meetings rather than always having to rely on hotels and, again, get you some wireless, the ability to get your materials as needed in real time. I apologize for our mission developer friends for being a little cramped. We'll work on that next time. It's literally just been since Friday, so let us know if you need anything. And again, just want to add my welcome to the chairs. This is obviously a very interesting project, very diverse, lots of expertise required, which is why actually you may notice the steering committee is a bit larger than some of our prior ones. We usually aim from 15 to 18. But just really felt, given the diversity of measures, we wanted to be sure we had the right expertise at the table. Thank you all for coming, and we'll get into more details to follow. But in terms of just logistics, there's food, coffee right there on the side over here. Let Ian or myself know, or Sarah, if there's anything you need. And bathrooms are right out to the...
Bathrooms are right out to the right. So and there's...
But you need a key.
You need a key. Or red... Men and women on it. So if you if the key's not there, you might have to do a handoff as you're going there. So we'll wait. And I guess just kind of some other housekeeping stuff. There's coat closets in the back if you want. And just wanted before we move forward, I wanted to make sure that everyone was aware that all of NQF's workings are open to the public and recorded. So everything that is said within this room and discussed is actually being recorded. Donald over there, who takes care of all our AV technical stuff, is recording all the information so individuals on the phone can hear, as well as later on if individuals from the public or the steering committee want to listen to the actual recordings. And there's also a transcript available as well. So that's just one housekeeping thing to keep in mind, is what you do say today is recorded and will be available to the public. Another housekeeping thing I want to just bring to individuals' attention, I just was aware of it, across on the south side is Toyota, and I think the hearings are happening, and so if you see reporters and cameras in here, it's not because it's meeting right now, so we're okay at this point, but I just wanted to bring that to people's attention, that there may be film crew here today. Hopefully I think they're going to be on
quality.
And one other thing, I guess, for individuals who want to access the Internet, if you haven't already, it's the Homer Building. There shouldn't be any lock to it, so it should be free to get online. Dr. Bell, have you had any luck with it?
Not yet.
Okay. So
we're going to go around and...
Perfect, yeah. If you'd like to start off with introductions, because I know not everyone was able to attend the introductory phone conference, so if you'd like to do some introductions.
So we should go around the room and introduce ourselves. I'll start. My name is Scott Gazelle. I'm an abdominal radiologist by training. My PhD is in health policy, and most of my research is new technology evaluation. And so I was on the prior committee. This is my second time on the metrics effort.
Eric Peterson. I'm a cardiologist by trade, but have no imaging background whatsoever. So I'm the random assortment here of what will happen if you put a non-imager in. We know a lot about the field. I also do outcomes research. I'm associate director of the Duke Clinical Research Institute.
I'm Kirk Spence. I'm a clinical cardiologist with expertise in echocardiography, and I do work on advocacy for the American Society of Echo.
Judy Zerzan, I'm Colorado Medicaid Medical Director. I also do a little research on Medicaid prescription policy at the university.
Hi, I'm Basil Mesh. I'm a trained neurologist with subspecialties in neuroimaging, headache, and neuro-oncology. And I've been running a fellowship program in neuroimaging for 20 years in a headache center.
I'm Patty Raxton. I'm a neurosurgeon and the head of neurotrauma and neurocritical care at Cook County Hospital in Chicago.
I'm
I'm Jacqueline Bello. I direct the Division of Neuroradiology at Albert Einstein and Montefiore Medical Center. And I run a fellowship training program there and am on the ACR Guidelines Committee.
I'm Howie Foreman. I'm a diagnostic radiologist practicing primarily emergency room trauma imaging. And I teach health policy and health economics at Yale.
Don Rucker, Chief Medical Officer for Siemens. We, as I mentioned in our disclosure, manufacture, I believe, all of the devices under consideration here. And so I'm in some perverse sense neutral. And I'm also on the clinical faculty at the University of Pennsylvania Emergency Medicine.
And I'm Troy Fessinger. I'm a family physician in Houston. I'm on residency faculty at the program there. And I'm here on behalf of the American Academy of Family Physicians. I've been on their commission on quality the last 4 years.
My name is Rebecca Smith-Feynman. I'm a radiologist at UCSF. My research focuses on outcomes and assessing sort of the benefits and risks of a range of tests.
Carl Dorsey. I'm a diagnostic radiologist. I've been doing breast imaging for 20 years, and my research interests are basically in technology assessment and various technologies for detection of early breast cancer.
Reed Gibbons, staff cardiologist at the Mayo Clinic. Extensive experience in national cardiovascular disease management guidelines and cardiac imager, primarily in nuclear cardiology.
I'm Roger Snow. I'm an internist and the deputy medical director for MassHealth, which is Massachusetts Medicaid program.
I'm Arthur Stillman. I direct the cardiothoracic imaging at Emory. Here representing, at the request of the American College of Radiology.
Keith Gaff, emergency physician from Denver. I've been involved in clinical guideline development and also quality performance management development historically. Here's a representative from the American College of Emergency Physicians.
My name is Gavin Setson. I'm a practicing otolaryngologist in Albany, New York, and here as chair of the Board of Governors of the American Academy of Otolaryngology, Head and Neck Surgery, also involved in guideline development and on the board of the Intersocietal Commission for Accreditation of CT Laboratories at ICACTO.
I'm Richard Griffey. I'm an emergency physician at Washington University in St. Louis. I did my MPH in clinical effectiveness and to work in quality and safety and administrative imaging.
My name is Mike Backus. I'm with American Imaging Management, which is a subsidiary of WellPoint. We manage radiology and cardiology pre-op for about 35 million Americans. I'm in charge of analytics and medical economics.
I'm Mary Gemignani. I'm a breast surgeon at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. My primary research interest is in screening for high-risk women. I was on the previous NQF meeting.
Great. I think what we've heard as you go around the table is there's a lot of varying interest. And to the credit of NQF, they've got a diverse group of people who might outside of this room be on opposite sides of various arguments. So with any argument, you could probably find some diversity of opinion around the table. What I'd like you all to consider, though, is while you might have got on this committee because you represented a certain group or a certain field or even have your own self-interest, unfortunately, in these fields, today you're here as a physician or a policy person who's trying to do the right thing for medical care. And I would like you guys to really keep that in mind as you think about the deliberations over the next 2 days. We all have, you know, these have major implications in theory or in reality for American medicine. They can be remarkably positive effects in terms of creating a system of care that will improve patient outcomes and make it affordable to do in a right manner. We all realize there are certain things wrong and broken in the current system. It is our responsibility and those for the next generation who will have to deal with these to make wise decisions. Sometimes you may have to make compromises in things that would be near important to your field or your profession or even sometimes your belief system. But today, the main thing is come up with the answer that you believe is ultimately right when you leave the meeting.
That's the back.
Sure.
Start
in the corner.
Sure. I'm Charmin Stevens, and I'm with the Lewin Group, and we are serving as a contractor to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to assist them with the development of the
Hi, I'm John Dean, a radiologist, chief medical officer of National Imaging, and a consultant to CMS.
I'm Dr. Bruton, and I also work for the Lewin Group and
I'm Michael Pentecost, I'm one of the medical officers of National Imaging.
I'm Larry Bassett, director of breast imaging at UCLA. I'm here to present for the American College of Radiology.
I'm Laura Kim, the director of data registry for the National Mammography Database at the American College of Radiology.
And I'm Judy Burleson, director of metrics at the American College of Radiology.
Rachel Broman, the senior manager of quality improvement and research at the American Association of Neurological Surgeons. Rita Monagallagher, senior policy fellow at the National Center for Nursing Quality at the American Nursing Association.
Hi, I'm Sarah Fanta, I'm a research analyst at the National Quality Club.
I guess I'd just like to get to your attention two individuals who were initially on the screening committee were unable to attend today. So that's Dr. Patricia Howard as well as Ms. Kramer. So they were unable to attend today. In terms of just moving forward, I want to make sure that everyone has an actual paper copy of NCO's paper evaluation criteria. I know I tried to pass that out as individuals came in the door, but if you are missing it, we have copies here. I'll just pass some. Do you have anything down there, or should I just pass it down? So this is just a paper copy of the digital PDF that you provided. It's just NCS major evaluation criteria. Just hopefully it'll be helpful in terms of reviewing the major to be able to look at NCS criteria.
Okay. A couple more.
Oh, a couple more. All right. Seems like we're way ahead of schedule. I know I was here at 8 o'clock and people started showing up, so I was quite surprised. I can tell it's quite an eager group. So we are ahead of schedule. I think at this point we'd really like to just touch on some of the points that we looked at in the introductory conference call. Go over that just quickly, some of the key highlights to the project, and then we'll move forward from there. Okay, so as I mentioned, this is some of the information that we discussed as well as had on the webinar for introductory call, just going over some background of the project. It's part of a subtask of a larger HHS resource use project. This project is specifically looking at imaging efficiency, which makes it different from the other projects that are primarily looking at resource use across episodes of care. And really, one of the main focuses of this project is to expand NQF's current portfolio of imaging efficiency measures. I indicated the last project, which Dr. Gazelle participated with, I believe there was 8 endorsed measures that came from that. So we're really looking to expand NQF's measurement domain in terms of imaging efficiency, as well as to identify gaps within the field, which the steering committee identifies are key areas that we need in terms of measurement moving forward and helping to support health reform. So just some goals of the project, as identified earlier, to identify and evaluate and endorse additional measures suitable for public reporting and quality improvement, which specifically address imaging efficiency. I just want to bring to your attention, as we discussed earlier, key parts of NQS process is the public reporting and quality improvement. So that is a lens that each member of the steering committee will need to look through in terms of evaluating the measures. Are they available for public reporting, and is the measure really intended to improve quality within a specific setting or across settings? And then as touched upon earlier, really to identify gaps within imaging efficiency domains. So just the scope, these are kind of specific domains is when we put out the call for measures. These are some areas that we touched upon, trying to elicit some measures. We didn't get everything, that, you know, all responses didn't touch on these areas, but we got a very robust set of measures, I think, that came to us. So some areas we focused on were overlap, screening, patient safety. You can see here. So looking at past projects, as I talked about, we had imaging efficiency project in 2008. At the end of that, we walked away with 8 NQF-endorsed imaging efficiency measures. And they went across different focus areas. For the current project, the measures that came to NQF for the call for measures, we kind of looked at them in different buckets. The review groups are kind of based on those buckets, and we tried to sit you with fellow reviewers within the specific groups that you were looking at. We had majors touching on cardiac, imaging, mammography, majors focused in the emergency department with head and spine CT, as well as the coordination of care. So this next couple slides will just go over the process of what the actual steering committee is expected to do as participating with NQF and then what NQF staff's role is within the project. At this point, you can look at the top kind of bar in the center. The project has really already been specified. We're moving forward. At this point, we're now really at the steering committee review of majors submitted to NQF. Some steering committees, there is a technical advisory panel that supports them. Just due to the smaller set of majors that we received, we decided to just really have a steering committee. And really, in some groups, we've broken out into different review groups, and they've come back and reported, but for the flow and proceedings of this steering committee, we're hoping just to be able to take care of everything at the table. We'll have the primary review group really lead and elicit the discussion for the specific measures to which they're assigned, and then have the rest of the steering committee really add to that process. The next step would be we're looking at drafting recommendations. Throughout this whole process, NQF, we're taking notes. Everything will be recorded. We'll have transcripts. We'll go back. We'll record the conversations. We'll have a meeting summary that will be provided online. And the steering committee's input will really be key in coming up with that meeting summary. From that, we'll move forward into actual drafting recommendations. We'll put online for review and comment from the public. And then moving forward, we'll come up with actual recommendations for then voting and CSAC and board approval, and then we'll come up with an NQF-endorsed set of aging efficiency standards. And at the end of that, there is an appeal process. So NQF's moved towards really trying to have complete transparency through really at each step. Everything is open to the public, as well as there are opportunities when information is put online for the public to respond. So any type of public comments that we get, that will be forwarded on to the steering committee, and so we hope that you guys will be able to help us respond to those comments. So just going over a little bit further, I know we talked on some of these. Obviously, you're representing a diverse set of stakeholders, and really, I guess the main goal today is really to evaluate the measures that came forward to NQF based on the NQF criteria and make recommendations to move forward. And then the co-chairs, actually, time permitting, will be there to represent the majors that are potentially endorsed for CSAC. Then the role of NQF staff here, really the staff are here to support the steering committee in providing documentation, providing kind of a conduit to the major developers, and providing access to information that the steering committee needs to really make the rational and best decisions that they need. And then really another function is to help along the process of drafting reports and posting that onto the web so individuals in the public can respond to it. And then another key part is just maintaining the documentation and the process as we move through this process, making sure that we have sufficient notes and documentation to capture what the steering committee recommended to move forward. And here is a brief project timeline that we're looking at. Obviously, December and January dates already took place. We had the measures. We formed the steering committee. We had an introductory call. And then coming up in April and May, we're looking to move towards a comment period, then moving towards member voting, And then those measures which we, I guess the steering committee determines to move forward, that would go to CSAC in July, and then NQF board endorsement on July 28th, after which there is a 30-day appeals process. So that's just a brief rundown of the project timeline as well as the project as a whole. I don't know, any questions from the steering committee about the process, timeline?
I don't know if it's particularly Carl Dorsey. These metrics are meant to evaluate efficiency and quality for individuals, facilities, or both.
It actually depends on the measure itself. I think the majority of these measures are facility-level measures. There's a specific part of all the submission forms that specifically asks the developer to note the appropriate level of analysis. It's a really important question, Carl. So as you review those measures, please keep an eye on whether that's a measure that would be very appropriate for public reporting, the QI at the facility level, and then consider whether rolling that up or down makes sense. It's a really important point.
And is there some back and forth period with the developers of the measures where we could provide some impact on how to improve them?
I was just going to go through a couple of additional things just to emphasize your role today. So part of what, again, really emphasizing what the point Eric made at the outset, although you bring a very diverse stakeholder perspective, you're here because you bring expertise to the table. You want to really help us evaluate the measures, if they're the right set of measures to move forward. The criteria that we were given in this handout, we have tried very hard over the last few years to increasingly make them more objective, make them things that you could truly be able to overall, and again, because we are so transparent, give more information to the end users who are going to be able to look at this, evaluate it, see if they agree or not. You should know that all these projects, we are probably averaging over 300 comments that we'll receive from the public and members. So there's a very alive, which is a wonderful part of the process, but it means there'll be a lot of back and forth, even post this meeting, once we get through your initial process. But as much as possible, your evaluations are completely grounded in these evaluation criteria, and I'm happy to answer any questions as we move forward through those. Your options after each discussion, I wanted to spend a moment or two on that, because I think it's an important piece of this, so thank you for bringing that up, Rebecca. You have the option of, at the end of the discussion, if the reviewers who reviewed the measure after the discussion of the steering committee, you can say we recommend this measure move forward. That's the role of the steering committee. And what that means is it'll move forward through the rest of the process. Now, all measures go out for public comment, not just those that are recommended. We made that change about a year ago. So we'll get public comment on even the measures you say shouldn't go forward, and you'll be able to reflect on those. And every once in a while, the steering committee sees the comments and says, that's an aspect of this we hadn't really thought about and may make some changes. But in general, you'll overall recommend the measure. You have the option of recommending the measure with conditions. And this is really the point, I think, that you're trying to make. There may very well be clear opportunities to improve the measure based on your expertise. You can't rewrite the measure. That's not appropriate, obviously. You can't create a new measure. That's not appropriate either. But you can very much make recommendations to the measure developer. They oftentimes can't on a dime say, yep, we can do that. But we give them an opportunity after the meeting. We'll write up all the details of what your recommendation with conditions are. They'll then have a chance to respond to you. We'll share that with you. And then you can make a decision as to whether you would continue to recommend the measure if the conditions have been met. If the conditions weren't met, you then have the opportunity to say, okay, we'll accept it as is, or you could, in fact, make the decision and not recommend the measure. The other opportunity I want to mention is that there are a fair number of measures, I think, within the data set as well, within the set of measures that have not yet been tested. So NQF does have a time-limited endorsement policy, which specifically allows measures that have otherwise passed all of the other evaluation criteria. This is an endorsement light. This is really used on every other aspect of this, with the exception of the fact that you don't have adequate reliability and validity testing yet, since the measure's brand new, hasn't been in the field, perhaps clearly hasn't been an opportunity to do that yet. You also have the opportunity to recommend the measure go forward as time limited. We, up front, as staff, have actually gone through it and at least indicated, is there testing here or not? It's not as if you can recommend a measure that could go forward fully if it, in fact, has no testing. So those are your options, we'll work with you to be spelling out those conditions. But again, we can't just say recommend with conditions and be vague. If it's really recommend with conditions, it's got to be two or three things. The definition isn't quite right. The denominator, speaking, got the wrong, things that are very discrete that we can hand back to the measure developers based on the guidance of the committee and make a
Helen, I just wanted to comment. One issue that came up, I know, in the past is where is the line between sort of recommending changes and rewriting? So a number of the measures that we reviewed had internal inconsistency. For this one, had internal inconsistency where, for example, the title, the definition in that one sentence title was inconsistent with the numerator and denominator. If we were to clear up that, that doesn't count as rewriting the measure. That just counts as with condition.
Sorry, one question, Gavin Sampson. With respect to the handling of the comment period and the 300 comments, what are the mechanics and logistics in terms of how those are dealt with respect to staff and the steering committee itself?
Yeah. So what we'll do, what Ian and Sarah will do, is take all of those, we'll put them into a big spreadsheet for you. We'll go through the recommendations initially. We'll make some recommendations. Most of them are thanks for your time, Sarah. We'll specifically highlight ones that say your committee needs to review and make a decision. So we'll highlight that. We'll have a conference call with you where we'll go over the entire comment table, highlighting the ones where there's clearly an issue where there's an expectation the steering committee would need to reflect on it, as opposed to more, you know, fairly mechanical things that we can do back and forth for you with the developers. So as much as possible, we'll try to reserve your time for the areas where we think we need your expertise, and we'll make more of the mechanics the work of NQS. Yes.
So the steward of the measure, if we think it needs some minor changes, can change it and still save it for this cycle.
Exactly.
Not like we say no,
right,
and then it's the 2010 meeting.
So that's actually part of the logic. You may have wondered why we're meeting in February, but it's not going out for comment until mid-April. That's to allow the back and forth with the developers. That'll also be for us to draft the draft report that goes out with the measures. So what goes out in that draft report will, in fact, be after the back and forth with the developers. You've seen it, you've agreed it met conditions, and that's what goes out. So that's why there's a little bit of a cushion in there for us to get that worked out.
And then today there are opportunities, because many of the major developers are here, today and tomorrow, to actually discuss with them, kind of work out some of these issues up front, and then move forward, and we can have a back and forth comment period later on.
But, again, we can't rewrite that. We can't completely say this doesn't work, but if we did it this way, now the one thing you will have the opportunity to do as well, which is actually becoming, I think, increasingly important, is that at the end of the discussion, all through the discussion, we'll be kind of culling from your comments, what are the measurement gaps? What are the measures that, boy, we really wish they had come to the table? And then part of this draft report and final report that we'll put out will actually be a set of what we call research recommendations or measure recommendations, saying it may not have been in this set, or maybe if you had completely rewritten measure A, you would have really gotten this measure, and that would be in those research recommendations. So keep in mind, as you're going through it, as you can see, for those several of you who are on the first project we did on this, you know, this is a fairly new area. Oftentimes it takes a few cycles to really put out to the measure development field. This is really we're part of a supply chain. So as much as we can help support the supply chain and say, the experts say, what we really need is a measure on why, we're happy to put that out there, give them time to let that work come through a process, which can take up to a year, especially for measures that are tested, and then have another opportunity in the future to bring back those measures. So the other thing you should know is we didn't really talk about it very much, but we also are always trying to refresh the overall portfolio. So even if you endorse a measure at the end of this process, it is only endorsed for 3 years. And it's endorsed only for 3 years because the expectation is that evidence-based changes, things happen, such that if you look at most guidelines, the recommendation is about 3 years is the general right amount of time when there's a, you know, if you're going to look at guidelines in general, you would probably want to revisit them. So even if that measure goes through, it's still going to get another look. And secondly, we also have an ad hoc review process. Again, just keep in mind, the evidence, particularly for some of these areas and some of these guidelines, change so quickly that we also have the capacity that if any member or any public or anybody out there says, you know, this measure no longer works, this guideline has changed, this study indicates the evidence would suggest this actually leads to unintended consequences of measurement, we have the chance to go back and re-review the measure off cycle. So one notable example was that measure that had patients getting antibiotics within 4 hours of hitting the ED for pneumonia. Lots of unintended consequences of that measure. Lots of little ladies with CHF getting a good slug of antibiotics in the ED. Yes, antibiotic resistance. And we, you know, as soon as a lot of those articles began, a lot of that evidence began coming out that there was a problem there, we quickly worked with the measure developer. We did an ad hoc review. A revised measure was put forward that had a provisional diagnosis of pneumonia required as well as a 6-hour window.
again, so we can make those changes. We're trying to make it such that the portfolio is really have currency and that we're trying to get a best in class. Also, if a better measure comes forward within that period of time as well, at the time of maintenance, we'll have the opportunity to refresh the portfolio as well and say, okay, that measure may have worked for now, but it's all we got. There's a better measure down the road, and we'll try to refresh the portfolio going forward. Long answer.
Any additional questions?
So, I know I'm going to ask this later, so I might ask it in a general sense. If we feel the need for risk adjustment needs to happen, is that a minor? Is that a rewrite? Or is that, as long as they can accommodate the writers, the change?
You know, it really depends on what we're talking about. If you're asking, I think, somebody to add a risk model that doesn't exist, that seems like a pretty significant rewrite. If, on the other hand, the data is already stratified and we're saying, you know, we should really add age and gender or something like that, that might be something that may be able to accomplish in the fact. But you couldn't add a risk adjustment.
I'm having a hard time understanding what rewriting the measure means versus adjusting. I mean, not to put work in our hands, but why can't we rewrite the measure a little bit? Is that not in our...
We need to respect the fact that the measure developers have often spent up to a year coming up with this measure. They have had advisory committees. They've had lots of logic for the reason they put the measure together. You want to give them an opportunity to go back to their advisory committees and say, okay, this is what the committee said. And secondly, if it's really a different measure, that's, one of the clear lines in the sand for NQF is because of part of that supply chain, we don't do measure development. I think we try really hard to stay on the side of saying, okay, the measure's before us. It either works or it doesn't. Maybe there's some, fairly minor changes. And again, it all depends on the measure developer as well. We've seen some measure developers, be somewhat saying, okay, fine, we'll take the changes. We just want to make it done. And if they can do it on the time frame, and even if they're sort of bordering on being more significant changes, that's fine. But again, it's a back and forth. We can't force the developers to make those changes. They still have the opportunity to come back and say, nope. And you have to make a decision at the end of the day. Any thoughts from you guys who've been through this process before on that comment?
It's helpful, actually. Clarity. I think it's not well known that NQF doesn't actually primarily generate the measures. I mean, just as a out there in the world kind of comment.
I think my experience on the last one was that there were a portion where we came to very clear consensus as to what needed to happen to make the measure better. And on some of those, the measure developers agreed and were able to respond, and those measures went forward. And in others, either the measure developers didn't agree or the changes were so large that they couldn't be accomplished. And I think in that latter group, we've seen some of them come back this time, I think we'll see that with the MAMO measures, where we made specific suggestions that couldn't be accommodated in the review cycle, and so we're now seeing them in the next cycle. So I would say that is indication that the process is working in all of the different ways that it's intended to work.
Steve Gambro, as we've talked about before, I think we potentially get better measures if there's a larger lag time between the call for measures and when we start looking at them. Some folks may have been working these for a year, as you say. Many of us only found out about it in December, which is a very, very tough window to produce quality products.
Right, and one of the things we're doing with a broader sort of NQF approach is we're actually trying to move towards more of an expectation of a cycle of when measures will come up for both new measures as well as maintenance. And I've come up with, it scares me a bit, but there's about 28 committees that would need to meet over a three-year period of time. And the idea would be, I mean, in some ways it may replace some of these sort of quick ad hoc, get these things in quickly, but if you knew, for example, that cardiovascular was happening in 2010 and happening again in 2013, it gives a better window to say when you can prepare for the next cycle. So we definitely hear you, Steve. That's definitely our emphasis as well. It also then allows us to have the same cycle to look at what's currently endorsed and what's submitted. And one of the difficulties we get at times is the measure may already be part of the portfolio. It's not yet up for maintenance. It's only been in the portfolio a year and a half or 2 years, and yet a better measure came in. So to really say at the end of the day we have best-in-class measures, we have to have that capacity to do those head-to-head comparisons with all measures being on equal footing, both new and currently endorsed. And that's what that change in mindset is moving towards. We're getting there.
So I know we're ahead of schedule. Is there any reason not to move on to the MAMO measures?
No, there's not now.
Okay. All right. since I'm on the mammal group, I'll take it. One thing we learned last time was it takes us a lot longer to do the first one than it does all of the others, because we're all orienting ourselves to the process, to each other, and whatnot. So I'll try to do that with benefit of how this worked last time. Okay, and the other thing I'll say is that we're all here because of our particular expertise or background, but we're all here also to participate in the whole process. So even though you may be a cardiologist or a neurosurgeon or have expertise in an area other than mammo, now's the time to become a mammo expert and to be engaged in the discussion about the mammo measures, because that's the idea of the process. All right, so we have five mammo measures to consider today. Four of them are proposed by the American College of Radiology. One of them is proposed by CMS. At the prior meeting of the steering committee, one measure we considered was the recall rate. And the short story from that meeting was that we felt the recall rate was not a good measure in isolation. The specific discussion was lengthy, but we felt that for recall rate to be a useful measure, it needed to be paired probably with cancer detection rate and PPV2, which we'll get to. And so the measure developers have, because they really couldn't do that in the time frame, have come back with a suite of measures that we're here to discuss. Because they all relate to each other, I think how we should proceed is we'll have a brief discussion from the primary reviewer of each metric, what it is, what its strengths are, what issues might either relate to its definition or its applicability, some comments, and we'll move on to the next measure if we could, because my suspicion is what we would recommend, what we'll end up recommending is that we can't prove one without some combination of others, but that we probably don't want all of them.
Just one qualifier there would be very helpful for us as the primary reviewer goes forward to actually give their ratings of the criteria.
Okay, yes, absolutely.
So again, you want to keep it very grounded and make that very transparent.
But I think for each primary reviewer, as you go through, even though I know all of us who reviewed the mammo measures have comments about the others, we should try and focus just on a run-through, knowing that we'll come back and go through them all as a suite. So the five we have are number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 9. In brief, number 1 is the cancer detection rate. Number 2 is called the PPV2 for screening, which I think some of us would say might have been defined differently as a PPV1. The number 3 is the PPV2. Number 4 is the recall rate, and number 9 is the follow-up rate. So with that introduction, Carl, you want to go first for measure number 1?
Do I have to?
Would you be?
Yeah.
Please?
The way I looked at this metric was to be used in isolation, and that's very important to what I'm going to say. I think it's a good measure, but not in isolation. So my comments will be based on what I was told to evaluate it for, which was a metric. This is basically a metric that's asking for all the agony you produce by recalls and biopsies and evaluations, what do you get back? So it's saying for every positive mammogram you do, which includes category 0 from a screen, and includes 4 and 5 after the evaluation of the 0 from a screen, and that woman goes to some type of tissue diagnosis, i.e. needle core biopsy or much less frequently surgical biopsy, how much cancer is produced. So that's what it's saying. And it's the way it's written as a percentage. We usually consider X number per 1,000. So the way it's written, if you multiply that metric by 1,000, you'll get what the standard measures are. Very important to realize that this metric can vary widely depending on the population you're testing, i.e., age is very important, whether it's a prevalent screen or not, is very important, and these numbers can vary. There's a wide range, if you include all of them, that will kind of include all these variables. Anywhere from 2 to 8 or 10 per 1,000 is the range. But again, within that range, there's a big variability depending on...
Carl, can I interrupt for a second? I think in terms of procedure, it would probably be helpful for everyone else if we start by defining the numerator and denominator as proposed for the measure, because not everyone may have...
Let me read from the statement. The number of screening mammograms, this is the numerator now, the number of screening mammograms with a BI-RADS assessment of 405 plus the number of screening mammograms with a zero that result in a tissue diagnosis of cancer. So basically, it's the positive mammograms, including screening and diagnostic, positive being defined on a screen as 0, 4, and 5, positive being defined on a diagnostic exam as 405. That combination is the numerator. The amount of screening exams you've read is the denominator. That multiplied by 1,000 is the cancer detection rate. So that's the metric, and it's a very good metric when used with others. In isolation, it doesn't tell you too much other than you're in a huge range. It's sort of like accuracy. If I define accuracy for screening mammograms, it sounds like a great metric, right? Accuracy is true positive, true negative over everything you do. Well, if I read everything as negative, I'll have an accuracy of 99.8%.
Can I put this into context just a tiny bit, just so people have a ballpark of what this means? If you read 1,000 screening mammograms, there should be in the ballpark of 6 or 7 or 8 cancers in that group of 1,000 women, and a cancer detection rate is usually around 5. So you're expected to find about 5 cancers per 1,000. As Carl said, it varies by age. So if you look in 20-year-old women, there aren't that many cancers to find. If you look in 80-year-old women, there are a lot of cancers. If you look in women with palpable breast lumps, there are a lot of cancers. So those things matter. But basically, you're looking at about 5 or 6 cancers that you usually find in 1,000 mammograms. If you're really doing a lousy job, you might not find them. If you're doing a great job, you might find more of them. So that's what this is trying to get at.
Just another thing, just a little perspective thing. Radiologist's view of the world is, the patients I do, how did I do on them?
Yes.
From a more societal perspective or a hospital perspective, you might say, well, are you screening the right people, as you've sort of indicated here? If you obviously are screening a remarkably low-risk group, 20-year-olds, you're going to have a low score on this, but it's not reflecting anything the quote-unquote radiologist did right or wrong. It is a reflection of who's going to the test.
So just taking that one step further, a measure that radiologists like to think doesn't matter so much about the prevalence of the group is a measure called sensitivity. And what that means, among the people who had cancer, I said there'd be about 7 or 8 cancers. If you find 5 of those, the sensitivity gives you a sense of how you're doing proportionately that's not influenced by the prevalence of disease. It's really hard to get a sensitivity. You have to learn about your misses. Cancer detection rate, you don't have to find out your misses. You know that you found 5 cancers. I don't know how many they're supposed to be, but so we cancer detection rate has a measurability appeal. That sensitivity does not.
Yeah, I guess my sense is, and I'm just trying to ground and make sure I'm correct on this, this is not a measure of anything to do with how good the reading was. It is a reflection of how we use the technology itself. Did we screen a population who was had a reasonable
risk? It turns out that cancer detection rate is highly correlated with sensitivity.
Yeah.
And so even though it's imperfect because it strongly depends on the prevalence, and even though my major problem with this is it's not risk-adjusted for the population, so I don't know how useful it is without that. But in general, it's highly correlated. So if you're doing a terrible job in terms of finding cancer, you have a low sensitivity, you'll also have a low cancer detection. They go hand in hand. So it's used as a measure of gross quality. So in facilities that provide care to underserved, turns out the cancer detection rates are lower.
Yeah. One point of clarification. The word screening, we don't want to get down to what is, but the word screening, I take to mean an asymptomatic individual. So someone who's there for a breast lump is not being screened. There's something there,
or believed to be there. So that's a different bucket.
The denominator here is the number of screening mammograms.
Okay, so it's specifically asymptomatic subjects.
But the age is hugely important.
Yes, they're all asymptomatic, but there's still a difference in prevalence as a function of age.
So I think, you know, let's try and get back to Carl's review of the measure in terms of giving your evaluation of it. Remembering that it's likely that we would recommend this be paired with other measures or combined with other measures.
Right.
Just one more point of clarification. The measure number did put the measure forward to be looked at as a group.
Right.
So there was not an expectation as part of the measure development that this measure would get looked at in isolation. It's supposed to be paired with, on the first page, the positive predicted value and the abnormal interpretation rate and recall rate. Just a dummy comment.
Okay. Well, I called specifically about this just to bring up a point. I said, should I evaluate this in isolation or with the others? And I was clearly told to measure it in isolation.
Clearly evaluate the measure as it stands on its own, but keep in mind at the end of the day, the developer is recommending they get looked at together. So
okay.
At the end, we can put that.
That's very difficult to do. It's a great measure, not in isolation. That's all I can say. And the way I evaluated it, I gave it an N only because I was told to consider it in isolation. And in isolation, it is relatively useless unless you have something else to define how the reader is obtaining these numbers.
Could we go through the specific points, though, the specific areas in terms of its validity and reliability? And
But again, can we? I'm just going to have to question this right off the bat here. Are we talking about a measure? You gave it an N because as a radiologist, do I think this reflects my quality? If the role isn't to reflect your quality as a radiologist, the role is to reflect how is the ordering hospital screening patients, then it may meet a different criteria.
It needs to be assessed within the strata of risk, just like we assess risk of other women. So now we state what you're saying, if the strata are 40 to 50-year-old women, or 50 to 60-year-old women, then
saying,
it is a measure
of
the radiologist.
Right, you're getting back to the radiologist again. I don't really care about the radiologist, just for a second. Let's imagine we want to do this. The analogy would be in cardiac disease, where you wanted to see, you know, did you order tests in the right patients? But this is what it basically comes back to, and I'm just curious if the measure itself couldn't be seen under that light, being noted a radiologist as a quality measure, but
But it's not intended as an individual physician measure. It's intended as a facility level measure.
Right, but no, it's a facility letter.
To what degree,
that facility
it's not
the
a
right group.
That's a different. We've got those in HEDIS already.
To what degree
those measures are out there?
To what degree does a facility really define who they're screening, though? I mean, essentially, in a straight screening mammography, right, asymptomatic patients, and this is much more patient-directed than the facility having a substantial amount of influence over the asymptomatic people that they get to show up in the door.
Now, see, this is where the world also is shifting. I might enjoy some of this discussion. The degree to which the center who gets the test, people all refer to you, you have the responsibility of being a screener of, are the tests coming in to me the right ones? Are we getting the right patients in to do this test to?
But, I mean, screening mammography is at least something that's the eligibility requirements are fairly clearly defined, notwithstanding the November.
This is completely separate from that.
Yeah.
This is once whoever comes in is the quality that those patients are receiving at some minimum level.
The problem, I think, that you're touching is a problem of are we dealing with something like a blood test where it doesn't take a cognitive input. And then you can say, well, the facility or, you know, their testing of this metric is good. Their method is very good and it works. There's a cognitive input to screening. So you can't separate it as to, okay, the facility is doing that. The facility is also the people who are reading it.
Right.
So indirectly, it is a measure of the people working at that facility. So if you have people who are, again, my apologies to any surgeons who read mammograms, who are all surgeons, they might have a cancer detection rate of 3 fitting in the group. But
They should have had one of eight if we take into account the age and if we take account all these other things. The problem is it's very difficult to stratify by age, very difficult to stratify by prevalence. They can do this in service screening countries where they have that data right off the bat. You can't do it here. So you have to get a range.
So let's
I think, well, it might be mentioned in the next measure, but what if their rate is 16? And
great. Boy. Then
well,
they might be
but are they really cancers or are they not? And
they
is there a lot of
it's
testing?
A symptomatic. It's a symptomatic.
Are there a lot of cascades of tests to then say those extra three ended up not being cancer?
I'd still like to let Carl get through his rating of this and let's get through the discussion and ratings of the measures and then have a discussion if we could because I think we need to at least get to that point.
So basically I said I ranked it in isolation and I said a no for the reasons that a lot of everyone brought up.
You ranked it in isolation. Which did you give it a no? Because again, I looked through.
The first one, the first evaluation that it shouldn't go further.
How important.
Right.
But you can change that now, now that you know it's a pool.
It isn't. We're not supposed to evaluate it as a pool.
Okay, well, go ahead. Let's go through all of them, and then we'll have a discussion.
All right. As not a pool, I don't know how to say this any more clearly. As not a pool in isolation as one metric, it's a no for me.
For which one? For importance?
For cancer, for importance,
okay.
Yes.
All right.
And the reasons are what I discussed already, that it varies so much on factors that are difficult to assess. It doesn't tell you anything about what you're getting. So that's
fine. So
yeah.
for discussion, how about the other metric?
The other metric?
In terms of reliability, evidence to support, those sorts of things.
The reliability is excellent. There's a lot of evidence to support its use. There's the article by Rosenberg that I'm sure everybody is familiar with from the BCSC that has a huge number of mammogram screenings, and it's a very solid individual metric. Its calculation is good. Its definition is good, and what it gives you is good alone.
I think Helen's pushing us. We'd like to get, for each of those boxes, if we could, an answer.
Because we need to record that.
For process, we're going to need to do that for every measure.
All right. So two is the definition of the detailed measure specifications. Can they be obtained? Yes, it can be obtained. It's much easier to obtain these electronically.
So would you give it a C then?
I would give that a C. All right. The next is three, which is...
Helen, you want us to do 2A, 2B, 2...
You want us to do each one?
Yeah. Right. We'd like to have each one if we could. No. You're a secondary reviewer. Let's see if we can get through the primary reviewer's comments, because I think from the NQF standpoint, we need to get these specific evaluation checkboxes.
In terms of trying to create efficiency, so there's review groups, so really it should be in tandem if individuals can really work together and trying to...
All right, so for 2A, David, it's great.
If we're just going, do you want me to do it when he's done?
Yeah, if we could.
Okay.
So 2A is a C.
2A is a C, and for the reasons I gave, let's go to 2B, which is reliability testing. I gave that a C as well, because it has been reliably tested in this large group. Let's go to C, validity testing. I gave this a C, only because the analytic method that's used to establish the validity requires a little more description. the current domain I gave is a C. So as a combination, I gave this a P, partially described. Let's go to 2D, exclusion is justified, that's not applicable. The next one, 2E, wasn't applicable. The next one, 2F, wasn't applicable. The comparability of multiple data sources method, I gave that a C, because they clearly, in this portion, stated that they have included PPP2 and the cancer detection rate and recall rate, which I think is a beautiful set of metrics for what you want to get at. 2H, which is disparities in care, I gave an NA, unapplicable. And so, let's see, experience of any overall, what extent was like criteria, scientific acceptability of the measure. Again, I only gave it an M because I was thinking of individual use. And let me go to 3, okay. 3 is in use. Public reporting of this initiative alone, I gave an N. No one would know what this means in isolation, especially for public reporting. I mean, look at us here discussing this, and we're fighting back and forth, and we're going to put this on public information. So I gave that an N. That's 3A2. 3A3, used in other programs and initiatives. That I gave, let me come down to that, whatever it is. Oh, 3A, I said I gave an N, only because of the isolation. 3B, which is the harmonization, I gave that a not applicable. I gave 3C a not applicable. And the steering committee overall, to what extent was the criteria of usability met, I gave that an M. As a sole indicator, it really isn't significant for the above reasons, but the M came from the fact that it was well constructed as an individual metric. So instead of giving it an M, I popped it up to an M because its definition is very clear and precise, and it's in use, not in isolation. 4A, data generated as a byproduct of the care process. I gave that a C. 4B, electronic sources. I gave that an N because I don't have a fear. In order to get this metric, the easiest way is if you have what's called a mammography module, where you prospectively, as you read each exam, you put in your data, and it generates a clinical report and saves the data. If you don't have this, the usability is much, much, much more difficult to do this by hand. So that's why I gave it an N. I don't know how many facilities have a mammo module. I don't know if the ACR knows this, but it's very difficult.